Welcome to Citizens Climate University's lesson tonight. It's winning over local elected officials. And if you are someone who is working on passing a local municipal resolution urging Congress to pass carbon fee and dividend, or planning to meet with your mayor or chamber of commerce, you've come to the right place. Tonight, we're lucky enough to have three CCL veterans to pitch three different storylines of what's worked for them and the strategy behind how they've been able to win over their own local officials. First up tonight, we'll have Peter. Peter Jarker-Sellers is a chapter leader for Citizens Climate Lobby's St. Paul chapter. He recently finished a gap year where he volunteered for CCL and did other political work full-time. He attends McAllister College, where he studies public policy and international relations. And in addition to lobbying members of Congress, Peter's work for CCL has included gaining, still to this day, the largest city or municipal to endorse a carbon fee and dividend resolution of Philadelphia before he moved to Minnesota. Next up after Peter, we'll have Alex Aminette. If you are a blog subscriber, you'll recognize Alex's name. She is a freelance writer and grant writer and editor as well, who lives out in Montana in cattle and sheep country and raises vegetables and hay. Alex has been a blog contributor for the past several years and helps coordinate Montana's media and agriculture focus throughout the state. Alex is also a member of the local Chamber of Commerce in Big Timber, and you'll hear her story as well as her advice in just a little bit. And last but certainly not least, at the end of the presentation tonight, we have our very own community help desk coordinator, Sandy Simon, that Jill of all trades, calling in from Nipomo on the California Central Coast. Sandy began volunteering with Citizens Climate Lobby in 2012 and was a group leader in CCL's SLO chapter and started her own chapter's writing team. And then 2 years ago, Sandy began working with National, answering help desk questions on community and now on the main website as well, and now co-leads the print media action team and coordinates the National Municipal Resolutions Project. So you have come to the right place to learn from three experts. I'm just going to go over a quick review of tonight's learning goals as well as the agenda and then pass the baton to Peter. So hopefully for tonight, you came learning or expecting to learn one of the three main areas that we'll cover. The first of which is communicating and building relationships with your own local elected officials, as well as working towards passing municipal resolutions and gaining endorsements in the support of carbon fee and dividend from these key stakeholders. And then lastly, we're going to have a chance at the end of the hour, probably the last 15 to 20 minutes, for all of you online to workshop your own questions. We're going to be able to break out into specific rooms depending on your own interests and have a chance to ask questions and get ideas from these CCL leaders who have run their own successful campaigns. The format for the agenda is as follows. We're going to start by building out why local support is important and then answering how climate change is clearly both a local issue with a national focus. We'll then start with how do you really begin with this process? It sounds like many of you are already in the midst of this, but if you're just starting in that nascent phase, hopefully this can help germinate those ideas. We'll then jump into doing the research and how do you actually develop your own plan as a team. And then pivoting from there, we'll talk more about preparing for meetings, lobbying for success, working with chambers and local business groups, and then how do you really leverage success back home to make sure that all that work was worth it. We'll have a chance to learn from specific case studies interspersed throughout the webinar, but without further ado, we're 5 minutes in, and I'll turn it over to you, Peter.
So yeah, I think that endorsements from local elected officials are really, really, really important. And that's for a number of different reasons, but the biggest one is that local elected officials represent a lot of constituents of the members of Congress that you're trying to reach. You know, if 7,000 people voted for a member of a city council, a member of Congress can assume that, you know, it at least half and probably the vast majority of those 7,000 would be supportive of something that that local official would recommend. So you have the ability to convey the opinions of a whole lot of constituents to a member of Congress, all at the same time. And then obviously if you're passing a resolution, then that just gets multiplied, you know, potentially by 20. And so that would be true for the member of a city council, a mayor, a county commissioner, any state legislator. All those people just communicate the will of their constituents just the same way that a business leader or the pastor of a church or any of the other people that we talk about in terms of grassroots endorsements would. The other thing, though, that I think is especially important about local elected officials and makes resolutions and any other type of endorsement from local elected officials really important is that local elected officials, because of the political world that they exist in, they have personal relationships with members of Congress that another leader in the community might not. And so if they're recommending something, they might be recommending something to a friend or in the member of Congress or someone that they've collaborated with before in the member of Congress. And then the member of Congress knows that these people are taking largely the same concerns into account. They're thinking about feasibility, they're thinking about the effects on the same constituents, and they're thinking about politics and the way that, you know, I don't want to pick on anyone, but one type of endorsement I know that we've gotten is from, local Audubon societies, and they're just going to be concerned about birds, and they're going to think, will this policy help birds? Yes or no? And they'll convey that to the member of Congress, and the member of Congress will value that, but the Audubon Society might not be thinking about, you know, how politically viable this is in a given place the way a mayor would be. So I think that the intersection of the member of Congress and the local officials' interests really come together in a great way. Obviously, climate change is going to have a bunch of effects on cities and municipalities and other areas within a congressional district if you're talking about a state legislator. And those are all really compelling things. Those are things that the constituents of those local elected officials are going to be concerned about, and they are probably putting pressure on those local elected officials to deal with. So those local elected officials have a political pressure to want to be seen as doing something about it. And promoting policy at the federal level is definitely one way to do that. There's a list here, and these are all very real things. Sea level rise especially is just something that's really, really costly because of the potential damage to infrastructure. And, one of the most vocal local elected officials on climate change is the mayor of Miami. And that's just really not a surprise at all. All of these things are serious impacts. And as it says, these do really strain local budgets, and they take money away from education, and they take money away from local infrastructure. And so not only would any local elected official be concerned about the climate impact, but they'd be concerned about the other services that they're not able to provide for their constituents. And a lot of those other services that they can't provide are the things that people really associate with local elected officials. And so that puts a lot of political pressure on them. If the school district suddenly doesn't have less money, you're going to find a lot of people who are going to be more likely to want to vote out the mayor. And, I don't want to only focus on the politics, but that's real and it is relevant and it's important to have in mind when you're thinking about all this. The other thing is that a lot of localities and municipalities have climate goals already, and they want to find ways to meet those. They're committed to finding ways to meet those. All the you know, the "we're still in" campaign that's mentioned here is a really big part of that. The number of mayors that said, you know, we're going to stick with the Paris Agreement, we're going to implement it to the degree that we can, that's a really significant thing. But localities are really limited in terms of what they can do. They can work on energy efficiency, they can work on transportation, they can work on changing permitting processes that are more in favor of renewable energy. But if the city's still getting their power from a massive coal plant that they don't have any jurisdiction over, there's not that much that they can do about that. And so if they have a goal of, you know, 100% renewables by 2040, say, they need a lot of help meeting that goal. And that's a great place for us to step in and say, we have this policy, carbon fee and dividend, and it's really going to help you meet your own goal. And I think that's one of the things that is really, you know, attractive to local elected officials about what we're bringing. And it also really conveniently brings us an in, because I found it really effective to start the conversation by saying, I'm reaching out to you to find out more from you about what your climate goals for X city are, and I want to talk to you about how I can help you meet them. And any local elected official is going to be really excited about someone who's offering to help them meet a challenge that they've already talked about. And so in the larger scheme of things, that's real, but also in the more logistical sense of you're reaching out, that's a really effective way to go about it. Brett, next. Oh, yeah, Kate, great. On the one hand, this slide is really important because all of these things are things that help, and doing things in a logical order is really helpful, you know, such as it, you know, initially deciding on the people that are going to be undertaking the effort. But I also just want to say that in my experience, you kind of never know what you're going to meet, and things unfold how they unfold, and a lot of it is reacting to what the concerns of a local elected official are, and in the context of a city council, what their priorities are, what restrictions they have on resolutions. Someone in my chapter approached their city council, and the person said, or the council member said, that we are not going to pursue resolutions that have policy recommendations any higher than the state government. And we like what you're doing, but, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And that's just something that you might have to confront. But in general, finding the people that you're going to be working with, developing a sense of who you're going to approach, when you're going to approach them, and finding allies that you can work with, finding the member of the council who would be interested in really being the driving force behind a resolution in the same way that you try to find co-sponsors to a bill is all really helpful. And you can do those things regardless of what conditions you meet. I'm going to tell the Philadelphia story, but I'm going to try to tell it quickly because it's long. And I also just want to say that it's not how it's always. That's great. That's cool. There's City Hall in the middle. Going down the street, there's that building with the statue on the top. They had a law for a while that you couldn't build any buildings higher than City Hall. And then I think at some point in the 70s or 80s that just got smashed, and you see all the skyscrapers. But I just want to caution you that the Philadelphia story is not how it always goes. And I've had other experiences that have not gone at all like that. And in the last breakout session, I'll be happy to talk about those too. But I hadn't had any experience working with city councils. And I just, you know, printed out some info about carbon fee and dividend and CCL. And I went down to City Hall. And in Philadelphia, you can go to each council member's office individually. And so I went and I said, I'm coming here on behalf of CCL. And we have this endorsement effort. And this is how it ties into our larger goal. And this is the progress that we've been making in Congress. Could you help us by lending your name in support of this? And I talked to all these offices, and some were significantly more interested than others. And the office of the chairwoman of the Committee on the Environment was very, very interested. And I worked with her staff, and we agreed on language for a resolution. And then they brought that to the council, and there wasn't that much. There weren't very many hesitations about it, so it passed relatively easily. It was interesting the degree to which, unlike Congress, I didn't need to go and convince all the members of the council or the staff. So it was a good idea. I walked into one office. I said, there's this resolution in the works, and it's endorsing this policy, and I'd like to take some time to talk to you about it. And the woman said to me, you know, if it's Councilman Brown that's working on this, my boss loves what she does, I don't need to hear any more about this from you. So that type of thing might happen, and that's great. But that's the Philadelphia story. And as I said, I'd be happy to talk about other experiences that I've had, some of which were less successful, because I think that they also provide some useful insights. But I'm going to leave you there for now.
Oh, the suspense will kill us, Peter. Thank you so much. And just a little cliffhanger. We won't have Q&A here. We will have time at the very end to do breakouts, but Peter has also worked in Minneapolis and St. Paul for the Twin Cities resolutions to give a little window. But let's pass the baton next to Alex. If you're all right to just jump right in, Alex, and share a little bit more about where to begin after doing your research.
Okay. Well, you really need to know the people with whom you're going to be discussing this. So you have to do research on who are the city council people or the chamber of commerce people. And it would be helpful if you attended a meeting, in fact, or two, so that you understand it. I'll give an illustration of researching your specific location and the impacts of climate change. Here in Big Timber, Montana, last year, the Yellowstone River was closed for 2 weeks, sections of the Yellowstone River. And if you don't know about the Yellowstone River, it's incredibly beautiful in the Rocky Mountains. It starts down in Yellowstone National Park and wends its way all the way up to joining the Missouri River. And it's dam free. There's no dams. And people from all over the world come here to go fishing. So when they closed down the Yellowstone River for a couple of weeks in my neck of the woods, it had a huge impact on the local economy. Not only the local angler shop, but all the other little stores. And this is a town of about 2,000 people. There's about two blocks worth of stores. There's the local quilt shop, the local bakery, et cetera. But they all took a big economic hit, because when the husbands don't go on the river fishing, the wives don't get to go shopping. They just canceled their trips. So the local hotel lost out on it, on lunches and stuff like that. So when I this year went to talk to my Chamber of Commerce, that was an illustration of an impact of climate change. And not only did the Yellowstone close because, well, they closed because of high temperatures, low flows, and there was a parasite that was eating and killing fish. So that those were the three reasons it closed. And it was generally acknowledged that the high temperatures, you know, and the low flows were a result of the change in climate. And so people, you know, looked you know, looked and didn't have to look very far to understand the local impacts. For past evidence of environmental resolutions, I had attended many Chamber of Commerce, City Council meetings in a prior town where I lived, and knew how they felt about environmentalists and environmental resolutions, and they were not friendly. And that was the Tri-Cities, Washington, Richland, Washington, just had a very kind of bitter history in that town of people. Every time an environmentalist would come up and say, let's try to conserve this little wetland, the city council would say, no, we want to develop it. So I kind of knew the people I was coming to talk to. And I did not develop a climate action plan. I didn't see one in either the cities where I live now. And but it's a good idea to do that, you know, see if they have a climate action plan, and acknowledge that that's a great thing that they've done if they have one. Anticipating and counting the council's votes. Yes, you have to know the players. You have to understand who is going to be there and how they will vote. And the better prepared you are, even memorizing what you're going to say, memorizing your talk, looking the part, if you're in a town that's very business oriented, not country oriented like the town I'm in now, really go looking like a business person, and be very respectful of that, you know, the business of the town is to make money. So you have to pitch your pitch geared towards that way. That this carbon fee and dividend is fiscally conservative. Preparing your bios from past history and public statements, I would use that in the sense of knowing who these people are, and having read the newspaper. Do your homework in terms of know your what people in your town, you know, leadership are thinking about and how they've been, you know, acting, and also have a very deep understanding that an appreciation that these are the people who run the town. These are the people who see to it that the, you know, the traffic lights work, that the drains are cleared. You know, they oversee the garbage trucks. You know, these are people who make your town work, and understand and appreciate them for that. If nothing else, just know that they're responsible for keeping the town up and running. And they're responsible for, you know, responding to tragedies. Your informational binder or packet doesn't have to be extensive. It can be as simple as the carbon fee and dividend two-pager. But you can also have information that you can get from the Citizens Climate Lobby website. For example, the climate action plan, who supports carbon fee and dividend handouts that you can get from Citizens Climate Lobby under resources. There's fact sheets. There's take action, seek endorsement and endorsement reports on CCL's website and CCL community. You can go to the CCL website, and under Our Climate Solution at the top right hand side of the page, you can click on supporters and find information of all the resolutions that have been passed. And I did that when I went to the both the Chamber of Commerce and the Citizens Council meetings. And also, who's in Citizens Climate Lobby? I always mention George Shultz, because people know George Shultz, they know his name. And you want to, basically in these very conservative communities, you want to highlight your conservative friends like Bob Inglis and George Shultz. And also our advisory board members, for example, Catherine Hayhoe. I always highlight her, as she's an evangelical Christian, and I bring her forward when I discuss, you know, who are people in Citizens Climate Lobby. And then you can also talk about the wonderful happenings with the bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus, and how our solution is a bipartisan conservative solution that people from both sides of the aisles can really, you know, sink their teeth into. And why, that conservatives like it because it's revenue neutral, and liberal folks like it because it addresses the problem of climate change. So I mentioned knowing your audience. In my town of Big Timber, there's a segment of the population that is, they call themselves the Patriots, and they don't like the government basically telling them what to do. So I really was very sensitive to that when I went and talked with the town, with the Chamber of Commerce. And also there's ranchers, and the town makes money off of agriculture. It's heavily dependent upon ranching for sheep and cattle, and not so much farming. But in the Tri-Cities, there's a lot of farming. It's surrounded by wheat farms. So you really have to know who's the city council, who's the Chamber of Commerce representing. Besides the stores, they're also representing other people in the county and are responsible to those people. So you really have to understand the history of the town and be sensitive to that. You really don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're going to open up a can of worms, or you're going to get yourself into a fight with somebody because you mentioned somebody's name that you happen to know that the mayor really hates that person. So you really don't want to, jeopardize your possibility of connecting with people. When you want to speak to about how the carbon fee and dividend will benefit them, you also want to tell this to the person who's invited you to give the talk, the council president or the Chamber of Commerce, so that they know exactly what you're going to say. But for the how the carbon fee will benefit them, one thing I did, it was kind of a spontaneous joke, was I said, carbon fee and dividend is going to put a dividend in people's pockets, and therefore people will have more spending money. And then at the Chamber of Commerce meeting, we were eating lunch in a hotel that's very expensive. It caters to very wealthy tourists, and hardly anybody can go there for dinner. It's like a once a year event. So I said, we were having our meeting in that hotel in a room, and people were eating like grilled cheese sandwiches, not the pricey lunch menus. And I said, if we all had this dividend check, we'd be able to afford lunch at the Grand. And everybody cracked up when I said that, because it's like a running joke, that people can't afford to go to the Grand, but if they had a dividend check, they'd have maybe 45 extra dollars, in their pocket, and they could go to lunch or dinner. It is really important that you don't make the host who invited you uncomfortable. You're reflecting him he invited you. So you have to, he or she invited you. So you have to make sure that they're comfortable with what you're going to say. Don't pull a fast one on them. They're your buddy, and treat them that way. Okay, in terms of the Chamber of Commerce, they actually do have a policy that mentions climate change and a market-based solution. Highlight that. You can go to the Chamber of Commerce website, and I think there's a link on this. Peter, Brett, you're going to have to tell people where the link is. But I brought that forward. I said, our National Chamber of Commerce has a policy on climate change. Here it is. It's on page 8. And I showed them the words and the bullet points, and it says in there, market-based policies are, we favor that. We do not favor government regulation. And I highlighted that when I talked about the carbon fee and dividend. I said, this is not a regulation. This is a carbon fee and dividend, revenue neutral, market-based approach. And I did make a brochure. I made it red and blue. I did not make it green and blue. I used red. I kind of came off like I was a Republican, which I'm not, but I can relate to a lot of what the Republicans stand for. And I was very well prepared in terms of, I knew exactly what I was going to say. And the more prepared you are to the point of memorizing what you're going to say, so it just rolls off your tongue, you will feel so great, because you will not be going, and shifting from foot to foot, you will be up there with a lot of forward momentum and energy, and you'll be smiling and happy and inviting people to listen to you, and they will warm up to you right away, and you'll have a good time, and they'll remember you, and then they'll take your brochure and they'll clap, and you'll be really happy. So even if they don't endorse the carbon fee and dividend this year, they'll see you around town, they'll go, oh yeah, and they'll approach you because you'll be, you know, a friendly person, and that's what you should try to do. You should strive for that. Okay, so the Big Timber Chamber of Commerce is mostly women who run like the quilt shop, the bakery, a clothing store, clerks in the hardware store, clerks in the drugstore. There's a professional photographer. She has a store. There's a lady who runs the insurance company. There's bankers. They're mostly women tellers. And then the president is a man who built himself a passive solar house. So when my husband and I were trying to get a loan for our house that we built here, which is a passive solar house, we went to that bank, and that guy said, no, we can't give you a loan. Our bankers won't do it. But it's really cool you're building a passive solar house. I am too. And so we sort of bonded. And then we found out he's a Chamber of Commerce. So I went up to him, and I said, Monty, I really would like to tell the Chamber of Commerce about the carbon fee and dividend. And he said, oh, sure, sure. The what? And so I explained it to Monty, and he said, okay, well, the head scratcher, but okay, yeah, sure, come. And so we set a date. And right before I went to the Chamber of Commerce meeting, I ducked into the quilt shop. And now, mind you, this is a year after we had closed the Yellowstone River. And I went into the quilt shop, and I was just looking around, and I didn't know this, but the quilt shop owner is the secretary of the Chamber of Commerce. So I went up to her, and I said, you know, you're the owner. What's it like running the quilt shop in the town? Because I'd never really shopped there. And she said, well, it, you know, has its ups and downs, but its business is good. And I said, well, how was business when the Yellowstone River was closed? And she said, oh, that was terrible. We lost 2 weeks worth of business. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. And she piped in, we lost two days worth of business this winter with this extremely heavy snowfall we had. Remember where the snow was like 8 feet high? We couldn't get our sidewalks plowed, and we had a fight with the city about who was responsible for plowing the sidewalks. And I lost 2 days worth of business there, and it's a big deal to me. And I said, well, you know, I think this is due to climate change. What do you think about that? And she said, I don't know, but all I know is we've never had this happen before in this town. And I said, well, I'm about to go give a presentation at the Chamber of Commerce about a solution to these extreme weather events and climate change. And she said, oh, good. Well, I'm the secretary. I'll be there. I'll see you there. You know, and then I went out the door, and then I crossed the street, went in the hotel, and sure enough, she shows up. So they had, right before I talked, they had a guy talking about insurance. And he was from another town, but he came to talk about medical insurance that you can buy if you're a store owner for your employees in case of catastrophic illness that isn't covered by other insurance. So after he talked, they had me get up and talk. So I segued in by saying, I'm going to talk to you about an insurance policy. And this is an insurance policy the likes of which you've never seen before. But basically, I want you to think of this as an insurance policy. And it's called the carbon fee and dividend. And I was just speaking with, and then I mentioned the secretary's name who owns the quilt shop. I was just speaking with Sarah. And she was telling me that, you know, last one of them when Yellowstone closed, and this last summer when the Yellowstone closed, and this winter when we had the extreme snowstorm, we had a hard time, you know, businesses lost money. And everybody in the room was like nodding their head. Yeah, we all did. And I said, well, I think these extreme weather events are about climate change, our changing climate. But I'm not here to talk to you about that. I'm talking about, okay, I have 1 minute more. I'm talking about the carbon fee and dividend because it's an insurance policy. And then I quickly told them the story, and I hope you all know the story about George Shultz and Ronald Reagan and the Montreal Protocol and how they thought of it as an insurance policy. They said, what if the scientists are right? Well, we'll have this Montreal Protocol, and we'll hedge our bets against, you know, the ozone layer depletion. So this is the same thing with the carbon fee and dividend. And it'll put money in your pocket, and customers will come into the restaurant and buy lunch and yada, 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 that whole thing that I related before. And at the end, they all clapped, and I said, I have a brochure I'd like to give you. And I handed out, I don't know, there was like 25 people there or something like that. And I handed out the brochures, and that was it. And I left. And then a week later, on the Chamber of Commerce website, they posted a very kind note that said, last week, Alex Aminette from the Citizens Climate Lobby came to talk about the carbon fee and dividend. If you want to know more, click here. And they had a link to our website. So I was like really happy with the whole thing. And I can talk to you more in the workshop about more of the ins and outs of that. Thanks.
Thank you, Alex. And I think that your example especially uplifts, even in rural red state areas of this country, the importance of relationship development, and also that you never know who you're talking to in any of these stores, what connections they have with your own network. And on the question that I know that people have asked about whether or not Alex's meeting was with kind of a city council or another kind of one-on-one meeting, I believe that she was referring to the actual council meetings in the Tri-City area. And the links that I've provided in the slide deck will all be available tomorrow on Learning Center. And we'll go over the very end of this lesson where to find those resources. So know that you can download this very same presentation and have the scripts of even all of these advice slides starting tomorrow morning on Community. But before any longer, I'll pass it to Sandy Simon to take us through the final part of tonight's webinar before Q&A.
Thanks, Brett. I guess the first slide is drafting the resolution. You can put up all the bullet points at once just for brevity's sake. So work with your legislative champion. Ask for information on what works for your city. Share examples of several hard copy resolutions from the CCL public website. Sometimes staff will select one to use or will write their own. Aim for succinctness, clarity, and simplicity. Make it suitable for your community. Develop a resolution that fits your legislative body. Describe the severity of the problem and the urgent need for action. Highlight carbon fee and dividends effectiveness, fairness, and economic benefits. For information, go to the main CCL website homepage under Our Climate Solution. General scientific data can be included. Put specific details in an appendix. For an example, see the Modesto, California resolution on the main website. Lobbying for success. Schedule one-on-one meetings and meet with each council member. Another possibility is to do a presentation at a neutral location and invite all of your council members to attend, or do both. Keep your delegation small and pick a primary spokesperson for your meetings. When possible, include someone in your meeting who is a supporter who has access to the councilman. Consider resources you may have in your chapter or from a nearby college, faith, or environmental organization. Be prepared to describe and make the case for carbon fee and dividend. Stay focused on key persuasive talking points. Become prepared with data. Do practice runs to prepare for objections and arguments. If you have a team working on the resolution, meet together and strategize in advance of your meetings. Prepare a concise agenda. Organization is the key to a productive meeting, especially as this may be the only chance you'll have for FaceTime with each member. You can make emotional appeals, but avoid hyperbole. Keep your meeting businesslike and dress for success. Share your story. Do you have a story to tell about how climate change has affected you or someone close to you? Your stories make the issue real and relatable. This can be tied to local impacts which affect the health and economics of your community. Appreciate each council member's values. For example, their concerns about open space, clean water, or economic stability from the research you've done. Thank the council member for any pro-environmental votes taken in the past. Be respectful and politely persistent. Don't interrupt and never threaten, blame, or raise political affiliations. Handle the conversation in the CCL way, with respect, gratitude, and appreciation. Be a good listener. Opposing council members can provide valuable insights in advance of the council meetings. It's up to you to find common ground. Be the go-to person for information on climate-related issues for your council members. Let them know that you're available to answer questions after your meeting and to continue the relationship you've begun building at your meeting. if you're interested in doing a presentation before the council, talk with individual council members about it. Try to get a feel for how each member will vote. If you find a particularly sympathetic council member, would he consider being your champion to help you through the process? Preparing for the council meeting. Talk with city staff about the meeting process. Become familiar and friendly with the front office staff. They can be very helpful to you throughout. Have a good grasp of the meeting format. How long does each person have to speak during the public comments portion? How do you get your resolution onto the agenda for a vote? Attend a city council meeting ahead of time to gain an understanding of what typically takes place. Develop a strategy for publicizing hearings when you will be speaking to the council about your resolution. How many people from your chapter can attend and show support? What like-minded groups might also appear and support your effort? If you have connections to environmental organizations, invite them to attend. Prepare your presentation. If your city council will allow you to do a presentation, create a PowerPoint about climate change and CFD. How long can your presentation be? Check with staff. Try to agendize your resolution. If you have a champion, will he make a motion to put your resolution on a future agenda for a vote? Find out from staff what the procedure is for getting your resolution onto a council agenda. Work for a strong turnout of supporters. Have them wave their hands in support after your speeches, wear CCL hats or other visible attire, and sit together if possible. Go early and plan to stay for a few hours. Expect to be limited to very brief statements. Many councils only allow 3 minutes per speaker. Select a few articulate, prepared, credentialed, if possible, spokespersons to speak about your main arguments. Look to people in your chapter who have presented as part of the presenter's action team, volunteers who have a specialty in health or economics fields, or anyone who feels strongly about saying a few words on behalf of passage of the resolution. Stay respectful at all times and avoid partisanship. If questioned, rebut deniers by emphasizing their insignificant numbers among scientists. Don't get lost in technical counterarguments and treat all questions as serious and important. So success, how do we use it? Once your resolution has passed, update your prepared press release to reflect the vote of the council members. Email the press release to local media announcing passage as soon as possible, preferably the next day. Radio stations are the most likely to respond, especially your local public radio station. Follow up with the city clerk on transmittal of the resolution to Congress, or you can do it yourself with a cover letter once you receive it. You can write a paragraph into your resolution directing that it be sent to your members of Congress, as well as to other interested parties such as state legislators. Ask the clerk to send you a PDF file of the fully executed, dated, and signed resolution, which may reflect the votes of all council members. Check it over to ensure that it's complete. Upload the resolution into the endorser database so that it will be included on the municipal resolutions page on the CCL's main website. And send a PDF copy of your resolution to the Municipal Resolutions Project at resolutions@citizensclimatelobby.org. Keep in touch with coalition partners and spread the good news. Use passage of your resolution as an opportunity to build alliances with environmental groups in your area. Explore the possibility of their including a news story in their own newsletters about the successful passage of the resolution. Mention the resolution's passage when writing letters to the editor and op-eds, in meetings with your members of Congress, and when getting local endorsements. Point your members of Congress to the resolutions page on the public website after it's been posted. And celebrate your victory with your chapter. You deserve it. Now consider this. Are there cities nearby whose councils might also consider passing a CFD resolution? What would it take to begin work on that project? So some community resources, get a local resolution in the Take Action Center. There's also a municipal resolutions CCU lesson in the Learn Center under endorsements, getting local resolutions, and webinar. On the main website, state and municipal resolutions are listed under Our Climate Solution and supporters. The Conservative Caucus outreach page on community can be found at Connect Action Teams, Government and NGOs, and Conservative Caucus. And lastly, Community Forum, Municipal Resolutions, What's Worked for You? So quickly, the San Luis Obispo story. So here's the process I used for passing a resolution, CFD resolution, in the San Luis Obispo City Council last year. Every chapter has its own unique story of how they succeeded. San Luis Obispo, California, has a population of around 48,000, and its city council has 5 members. When I began researching and planning to pass a resolution in January last year, I was certain that it would pass because 3 of the 5 council members were liberals, and I had known 2 of them for over 40 years. The goal I set for myself was to pass a CFD resolution unanimously. I started by preparing informational binders for each of the council members and set appointments up to meet with them separately, starting with the 3 I expected to be the most supportive. I had a champion in the mayor who was married to the head of our chapter's endorsement team, so the scales were definitely tipped in our favor. I focused on the 2 members who I knew little about. Through my research, I discovered that one of them described himself in the press to be left-leaning on social issues and a fiscal conservative, with his top concerns being water preservation of open space and conservation. So it turned out we had lots in common and plenty to talk about during our meeting. I spoke with the last member by phone, and she was non-committal, which made me nervous. So when I spoke at council meetings, I directed my comments particularly to her. When I met with each of the council members, I gave them a binder to keep and refer to. After my meetings, I appeared before the entire council on 3 separate occasions, speaking each time about CCL, the benefits of CFD, and how climate change was impacting our local quality of life. In between, I met often with city staff who were extremely knowledgeable and helpful in answering my questions about process and giving me access to council members. One thing which worked in my favor and which I took advantage of was that in 2015, San Luis Obispo experienced a record of 29 days over 90 degrees, which was way out of the historical norm. I refer to this local impact as well as to its health and economic consequences in my speeches. I also praise the council for leading the charge against smoking, plastic bags, styrofoam, and for divesting from fossil fuel investments. I commended them on their forward thinking and decisive action and asked them to be an early adopter of our resolution. I briefly addressed the city's climate action plan and asked the council to pass a resolution. 2 other people in our chapter also spoke about various aspects of climate change and urged passage as well. At the end of a very late 3rd night of meetings in March, the council unanimously and enthusiastically passed our CFD resolution. There was joy and applause all around. After that meeting, I was too excited to sleep, so I revised the press release I had drafted to include the unanimous vote and then emailed it off to every TV, radio, and newspaper on the Central Coast from a list I had prepared, researched and prepared in advance. The next morning, I was contacted and interviewed by our NPR station, and that interview appeared on the 5 o'clock news that evening. We've subsequently mentioned the resolution's passage in our letters to the editor and talked about it with potential endorsers. In addition, the San Luis Obispo chapter went on to obtain a resolution from nearby Morro Bay's City Council, building on the success we had started in San Luis Obispo. I must say it was a truly thrilling experience to obtain a CFD resolution from our council, especially after dedicating a very focused 3 months to its passage. I wish you every success in your efforts to pass one too.
Thank you, Sandy. You are a one-woman press machine. I'm blown away by how much you got off in one night there and been able to coordinate. What a great story. And I'm already getting some comments here directed to me about the ability for that story to really ring true with others, what they were looking at. One quick thing before we pivot to the final part of the webinar here, Alex just sent me one last reminder. She was going to also remind everyone of the importance of checking out ahead of time with your sound person. somebody that if you might have a person coordinating your PowerPoint or your presentation and slides, to make sure to practice with them ahead of time. And if you know if you're going to have a microphone, also not to have any of things, audio or visual distractions during your presentation. So feel free to give a big round of applause to all three of our CCL All-Star presenters tonight. And here is what we're going to do. So again, if you're looking for ways to get a hold of either myself or Sandy after tonight, Sandy mentioned that the email, especially for the municipal resolution side of things, is simply resolutions@citizensclimatelobby.org. You can always email me at Brett@citizensclimate as well. And what we're going to do now, actually, is have time for questions, but we're going to try something, in the words of John Cleese or Eric Idle, I can't remember who, completely different. And how that's going to work is we're actually going to have team-specific locations. And so if you would like to spend the next 10 minutes breakdown in a...